Simon Winchester hit the jackpot with his book about the man behind the Oxford English Dictionary. So, naturally, his publisher asked him to look for another obscure, eccentric academic whose life could be spun into a best-selling page-turner. Winchester contacted one of his old professors for help, and the result is a book called The Map That Changed the World, William Smith and the Birth of Modern Geology. Simon Winchester read a bit from the book's opening.
Above one of the many grand marble staircases within the east wing of Burlington House hangs a pair of huge sky-blue velvet curtains. Although many may wonder in passing, rarely does any one of the scores of people who climb and descend the stairs inquire as to what lies behind the drapes. Once in a while, someone curious and bold will demand a look, whereupon a functionary will emerge from behind a door marked private and with practiced hand will tug gently on the silk ropes. The curtains will slowly part, revealing an enormous and magnificent map of England and Wales, engraved and coloured in sea blue, green, bright yellow, orange, umber, in a beguiling and unfamiliar mixture of lines, patches, and stippled shapes. The document is exquisitely beautiful, a beauty set off by its great size, more than 8 feet by 6, and by the fact that it towers, looms indeed, above those who stand on the staircase to see it. The care and attention to its detail is clear. This is the work of a craftsman, lovingly done, the culmination of years of study, months of careful labour. This, the official will explain, is the first true geological map of anywhere in the world.
Simon Winchester could probably make anybody's life sound fascinating, but William Smith actually gave him quite a bit to work with, even if his name and circumstances seem quite ordinary.
He couldn't have been more ordinary. I mean, how more ordinary a name could you get than Bill Smith? He was the orphaned son of a blacksmith. He went off to live with his aunt and uncle on a farm in western Oxfordshire. Because the aunt ran a dairy, and because she weighed out pounds of butter using a stone, and because this stone looked like a sea urchin to young William Smith, he became enraptured by this stone, this weight, fascinated by how it might have been created, fascinated by fossils, and fascinated by the earth under his feet. He was ill-educated, but he managed to get a job helping to dig a canal just to the south of the city of Bath. And he had this epiphany, a true moment of genius, something that sounds perfectly obvious to us today, which is that rocks are arranged in layers. The rocks at the top of a series of horizontal layers are, he said, more recently laid down than the rocks at the bottom. That was an early epiphany. Moreover, certain rocks can be identified by the fossils that occur within them. That was a second realization, perfectly obvious to us today. But in the 18th century, when people believed that fossils had nothing to do with life at all, that they were simply objects that had been placed in the rocks by God to show everyone what a wonderfully clever chap God was, that also was a revelation. And they were two revelations that enabled Smith suddenly to realize he could do something that had never, ever been done before. He could draw a map. If he had enough information about the way that rocks dipped down below the surface of the earth and what those rocks were, he could do the unimaginable. He could draw a map of the unseen, the invisible underneath of the countryside.
The map is the essence of the story, and we really must talk about it, but I think that you do need to firmly set the scene. This was a time in our history when we did not yet know of Darwin's theory. We did not yet believe that there was any past other than that written in the good book.
According to the people that were alive and kicking when William Smith was growing up as a boy, the world was created at a precise moment, 9 o'clock on the morning of Monday, the 25th of October, 4004 BC. That date, sounds ludicrous to us today, had been calculated with great precision by this priest in Armagh in Ireland called James Usher. And everyone believed it. I mean, it took 7 days to create, so by the 1st of November, 4004 BC, God rested. Fossils were nothing to do with life. They were, as I mentioned, simply put there to show how clever God was. This fog of ignorance and dogmatic belief from the Bible had to be pierced by someone. And it was Smith's work that began pushing this fog out of the way and allow us to realize that the Earth is a great deal older, thousands, millions of years older, that there had been sea in places where there is now land, that fossils had been things that were alive in the sea that had died and had drifted down to the bottom. These perfectly simple things, which we take as holy writ today, were in fact utter heresy as recently as 200 years ago.
So was it in fact heresy for Smith to have these two epiphanies and to notice the stratification and the placement of the fossils and the relationship of them?
Because he was so lowly born, the church didn't take it seriously. The people who did take it seriously were the people that ran geology at the time and who believed in Noah's flood and who were engaged in a debate between the Neptunists on the one hand, that believed all rocks had precipitated from the sea, and the Plutonists on the other, who believed everything had been vomited out of volcanoes. So they weren't concerned. There was no argument. Of course it had all begun on the 25th of October, 4004 BC. Geology didn't dispute that till Smith came along, but he was sufficiently lowly born that no one took him seriously at first, except these aristocrats that ran geology saw that this man had had the impertinence to create a map, thought it was a remarkably good map, and decided to copy it themselves, plagiarize it, sell it at a lower price than his was priced at, drive him into penury, bankruptcy, and the debtor's prison. So he was then out of circulation. The church didn't care about him too much. But serious science slowly took his ideas on board. And by the time he returned to London, because of the fairy tale ending of this story, returned in some sort of triumph, science had suddenly embraced this and was in a head-on collision with the church, a head-on collision that, of course, reached its most dramatic when, in 1859, Darwin wrote and published The Origin of Species. Yeah. Then geology and theology collided head-on.
Back to William Smith at a moment. It wasn't simply this matter of epiphany as he looked at the strata in the sides of the canal that he was digging or as he looked at fossils. What was it that spurred him to the realization that he could create a map, and how did he accomplish that as one man?
It's quite extraordinary. He, first of all, once he realized he could draw a map, he drew a small one of the area around Bath that he knew, putting six layers of rocks onto it. It's very primitive. The original still exists. In 1801, just over two centuries ago, he had a stab at the whole country. On a tiny little sort of 6-inch by 9-inch map of Britain, he drew from what few observations he had an idea of roughly where the outcrop of the Jurassic, which is the rock that produces most of the loveliest building stone of the Cotswolds. If you've ever seen little thatched cottages with honey-coloured stone, that's Jurassic, Middle Jurassic limestone. But then he realized he was on to something. He realized the only way he could produce a real map was to leave his job as a canal digger and start tramping across England by foot or on stagecoach or in any manner he could to get as much information as he possibly could acquire. And it took him 15 long years of hobnail boots and walking sticks and rain gear and sitting up alongside the driver on stagecoach journeys, earning a little money, you know, cash as catch can, to keep this obsession going. But he was utterly obsessed because he knew if he picked up enough information, he could draw a map. And in the end, after 15 years on his own, working hard, going everywhere from Cornwall to Northumberland, from Dover to Glasgow, he made this map.
It's an astonishing story. And then you come to the other stratification, the stratification of English society that allowed him to make these observations without incurring the wrath of the church, but then also forced him to deal with people who would steal from him without blinking an eye.
That was the extraordinary thing. The people that ran geology were perfumed dandies, aristocrats who looked at fossils for their aesthetic value than for any other purpose, really, and regarded the publication of a map by a man who couldn't comport himself in society, who had a bad accent, who didn't have connections, they thought of this as absolute impertinence. So they did him down. They copied it, sold it at a lower price. He went bankrupt. He went into debtor's prison. Everything he owned had to be sold off, including his huge geological collection. And he had to leave London with his wife, who also was going mad, as it happened, and became, to his presumed exhaustion, a nymphomaniac. And the two of them left London and for the next decade were living homeless in Yorkshire and Westmoreland and Cumberland. A terrible, terrible time until, in the end, mercifully, and perhaps it's not proper to give away the fairy tale ending of this tale, he was discovered and it was realised who he was, and the honour that should have come to him was eventually given to him, but after a lot of suffering.
You describe this as the map that changed the world, the title of your book. Is it still a map on which you can rely? Is the information in that map something that a geologist today would look at and recognize immediately?
In a heartbeat. I mean, William Smith not only produced something that was beautiful, not only did it on his own, but he got it right. In fine detail, of course, no, the map can't be relied upon. It's old and relatively non-accurate. But in its broad brush, and considering it was done by one man, to get it as right as he did is an astonishing achievement.
And what he did in creating that map was to change the way in which the world was perceived. And that, of course, then would have enormous impact on the economy of the world, the way in which industry approached the world beneath us.
Well, it meant that all of a sudden, someone sitting in Kansas or central Germany who might wonder idly, what on earth is beneath my feet? You get a geological map and you know exactly what's beneath your feet. You might know when you're sitting in Kansas in, let's say, 1890, that 5,000 feet below your feet is oil. And you would know that because a geological map showed you that that's where the places where oil gathers is likely to be. The moment Smith produced this map, the world and his wife realized that there was a whole new way of looking at the earth, and that suddenly a nation that was sitting on natural resources knew where they could be found, knew where they could exploit the earth to get out the treasures that lie within it.
Simon Winchester is the author of many books, including The Map That Changed the World, William Smith, and The Birth of Modern Geology.